You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
They're Democrats, each and every one of the 800,000 federal employees, including the tens of thousands being forced to work right now without pay. All of them, Democrats. So fuck them. Oh, no, wait. They're all Democrats, all those indentured servants still screening our bags at airports. But unlike the overwhelming majority of their fellow Democrats, every last employee of the federal government, all 800,000 of them, they all want Trump to build his wall. So, you know, still, fuck them. They're Democrats. No, wait. Breaking. This just in. Federal workers are patriots. Great patriots. All caps. As Orange Julius Caesar tweeted Monday morning, we must work together. The without pay was silent. We must all work together to build a wall we don't need, to solve a humanitarian crisis the president created, and to stop illegal drugs from flowing into our country, which they do primarily via airports and in the mail. And as of this moment, the president has no plans to build a lid over our airports or shut down the mail. But you know, it's only Tuesday. I guess it's too much to expect consistency from the Sundowner-in-chief, the bald and baldly racist, doddering old bigot in the White House. I mean, come on, Donald, pick one and stick with it. You can't run around the country for years saying that Democrats want to destroy the country and all federal employees are Democrats, and then claim all federal employees are patriots, unless they all owe their allegiance to and feel patriotic about a hostile foreign power bent on the destruction of the United States. And there's only one employee of the federal government that I can think of who matches that description, President Trump. Journalist David Leonhardt wondered why the resistance isn't out there resisting the shutdown. A deeply unpopular president shuts down the federal government, nearly a million people out of work. Federal contractors are being stiffed. Stiffing contractors is something Donald Trump learned to do in the private sector. And there are no large street demonstrations. If this were happening in Europe, Leonhardt quotes an expert, people would be pouring into the streets, but instead of lining up to protest, federal workers in Washington are lining up at makeshift soup kitchens. I have a theory. When a Democratic president signed civil rights legislation in the 1960s, he famously said the Dems were going to lose the South for a generation. LBJ underestimated. The South and all those racist Southern Democrats lost to the GOP for generations, plural, along with white Americans all over the country who've been voting Republican, often voting against their own economic interest, again, for generations, plural. And at the center of the rights attack since the 1960s, right there in the crosshairs, the federal government and everyone who works for it. The right has been attacking people of color and the federal government and the courts since Loving v. Virginia and Brown v. the Board of Education and the passage of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act, ever since the federal government and federal employees were finally compelled after centuries to begin defending the rights of African-American citizens, even if that defense was half-hearted at best most of the time. The right has been waging a long war to delegitimize the federal government and anyone who works for the federal government. Well, anyone who isn't a Republican elected official, of course, who has pledged to destroy the federal government. You know, your parents might be old enough to remember this.
I think you all know that I've always felt the nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
After Timothy McVeigh blew up a federal office building in Oklahoma City in 1995, killing 168 people and wounding 700 others, Adam Gopnik, writing in The New Yorker, predicted that future historians were unlikely to write, in the mid-1990s, politicians and talk show radio hosts created an atmosphere of poisonous hatred against the national government. Also, in a completely unrelated development, somebody blew up the federal office building in Oklahoma City. The GOP has been pushing a poisonous hatred of the federal government and federal employees and the courts for decades now. And in a completely unrelated development, Americans have been slow to come to the defense of federal employees, to the defense of park rangers and TSA agents and food inspectors, people we've long been conditioned to regard as the enemy. Here's hoping the protests start, and here's hoping Americans take to the streets soon to demand that the federal government reopen and that federal employees and contractors get paid better so they're not all of them one paycheck away from having to line up at soup kitchens. If we can learn to feel differently about socialism, if we can learn not to regard that term as terrifying, we can and should and need to learn to feel and think differently about the federal government, its utility, its legitimacy, and all those federal employees out there. Finally, on a different subject, I gotta say, I've seen that look. I've been on the receiving end of that look. That smug smile on the face of that MAGA brat. It was instantly familiar to anyone who's ever been bullied in an all-boys school like the all-boys Catholic school I attended. No one attempting to de-escalate a tense situation smirks in your face like that. That's the look someone gets on their face when they're getting in your face, looking for an excuse, any excuse, to beat your ass in front of their friends. All right, coming up on the Magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast, which you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, the Savage Lovecast Magnum, twice as long, more guests, no ads. Carrie Goldberg, victim rights advocate and attorney, joins us to talk about a gnarly harassment case she has brought against Grindr. Plus, your questions and my answers on the Magnum and Micro editions of today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Check out this week's menu and get $60 off at blueapron.com/savage. Thanks to Roman for supporting the Savage Lovecast. Roman is a men's health company that offers remote online diagnosis for ED and convenient monthly delivery of medication. For a free online visit, go to getroman.com/savage. That's getroman.com/savage. The Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Dame Products, a woman-founded company making toys for sex. Developed and tested by real people with vulvas, these toys are engineered to bring your solo and coupled play to new heights. Visit dameproducts.com/savage to see how they're making the world a better place, one happy vulva at a time.
Hi, Dan. I am a 30-year-old married female living in Texas. Now, I have been with my husband for about 4 years. We've been married for 6 months. Now, my question is, we recently listed a couch for sale on Craigslist, so I did pull up his email to see if he got any hits. I typed in Craigslist in the search bar to just narrow down the emails, and when I did that, I see that he had replied to a personal ad on there. Now, I know those aren't allowed on Craigslist anymore, so that tells you how old this reply was. But when I did check the date of that email, it was when we were dating for about 6 months. Now, I did confront him about it because we were together at the time, and he did tell me that he did send that email, and he almost cheated on me, but he said that's when we were first dating, and he didn't know where the relationship was going at the time. We've been together for 4 years, and I've had no inclination that he would ever cheat on me. I 100% thought we had a perfect relationship and now a perfect marriage. Now, I plan on having a child with this man, and I love him more than anything. And I've always thought this relationship was 100% perfect. And now to find out that he almost cheated on me, I just feel so upset and hurt, and I can't stop thinking about it. Am I overreacting?
Congratulations. You made it 4 years into a relationship, 6 months into the marriage, still believing that you two were absolutely perfect for each other and that this relationship was perfect. So about time the scales fell from your eyes, I think, because no two people are perfect for each other and no relationship is perfect. And people sometimes think thoughts. And sometimes people get online, they get on sites like Craigslist, or they used to get on sites like Craigslist, and they contemplate their options. They throw out a line to see if there are any nibbles, even if they don't want to get bit. Even if they threw out the line intending maybe to get bit, they get a nibble and then they panic and realize what a good thing they've got. They don't want to screw that thing up and they don't follow through with it. Sounds to me like he didn't follow through with it. If you found his Craigslist emails, usually you will also find the confirmation in those emails that a plan was made to get together, a concrete plan was made to get together. You don't mention that, which leads me to believe that there were no concrete plans made, that he wouldn't have made the mistake of deleting the Craigslist emails where he was just putting himself out there and then deleted the emails where he was making a concrete plan to get together with someone. So what happened? 6 months into your relationship, you were already sure that he was the person that you wanted, and he wasn't on quite the same timeline that you were. He was maybe not sure yet. He was still deep in the dating discovery process, thinking about perhaps making a serious, exclusive, monogamous, lifelong commitment to you. And at that moment, he thought, well, is she what I want? Maybe there's somebody else out there that is better for me. Not perfect for me. No one is perfect for me. And in contemplating his options, he appears to have realized that, no, you were the one he wanted, that you were the best choice for him. I think you should take that as a compliment. I think you could take that as a compliment. You can latch onto it and you can say, oh my God, I thought we were perfect for each other and I've just discovered something that I should have already known to be true, that we're not perfect for each other, because no two people are absolutely perfect for each other. Or you can tell yourself, he had choices and he chose me, that there were other women out there on Craigslist and probably other places that might have been interested in him. And there may have been a moment when he was tempted, and yet he chose me. I was who he wanted, and he had options. You can take this as a compliment that strengthens your marriage. You can take this as an affirmation of sorts, and kind of a bank shot affirmation. Nobody in a monogamous committed relationship, no one who is more certain about someone sooner than that person was certain about them, enjoys contemplating that person, not being on the same page, not moving at the same pace, not being as certain about you as you were about them at the same time that you were certain. It is a bank shot affirmation if you want to view it that way. And if you're interested in the long-term survival of your relationship, of your new marriage, you should choose to view it that way. I want to end with this quick reality check. He thought about fucking someone else and didn't. And you're spinning that as he almost cheated, and your relationship, all 4 years of it, and your marriage, all 6 months of it, are a lie. You must have seen in the last 4 years and change some dude that you thought about wanting to maybe fuck. If you weren't in a committed relationship, if you weren't with this guy, there must have been some dude who crossed your path, or that you saw on television. Have you watched Bodyguard yet? That you thought, yeah, if I weren't with the man I'm with now, if I wasn't married to him or if I wasn't dating him, I would get with that. I would want to get with him. Well, him too. He thought about getting with somebody else, and he fantasized using the tool that a lot of people use to fantasize, which is throwing out ads on personals websites with no intent of following through, no intent of actually cheating or meeting anyone. They just want the affirmation. They just want the erotic buzz that comes with getting a message from somebody who saw your pic or your ad and wanted to get with you too. So before you blow this up into a relationship extinction level event, ask yourself, have you ever wanted to fuck anybody else other than him since you met him? The answer is probably yes. So him too, he wanted to fuck somebody else at some point and he didn't. Now, of course, he took steps. He went out and looked for someone. Someone didn't just cross his path. And you can attach a great deal of weight and importance to that. Or again, you can focus on what he did not do. He did not touch anyone else with his penis. He did not follow through. He did not cheat on you. He had the option to. There was a moment where he could have, and he valued you too much and what you two have together too greatly to do it.
Hey, Dan, our daughter has been perhaps discovered using my wife's pleasure toys for her own amusement. And my daughter, who is 14, we need to figure out, how can we suggest she get her own toys? Or do we drop her off at one of our local adult toy stores with a $100 bill? Or what do we do, Dan? Help.
Unfortunately, you can't drop your 14-year-old daughter off at your nearest adult toy store, hopefully a feminist, woman-run, woman-owned adult toy store, because you got to be 18 in most places, or 21 in many places, to get into those stores. So unless your daughter looks much older and has a terrific fake ID, giving her $100 and pointing her at an adult toy shop, Yeah, that's not going to solve the problem. The only solution here is the awkward conversation that you desperately want to avoid. And think about this for a second. This is a case where someone is doing something, your 14-year-old daughter in this case, that's making you feel uncomfortable and making your wife feel uncomfortable, and you're shying away from confronting her about it, not in an angry way, just having a conversation with her about it, because you don't want to make her feel uncomfortable. Well, you guys feel uncomfortable. Why shouldn't she feel uncomfortable? And it is possible to have this conversation without shaming her. You just go to her and say, you're 14 years old and you're beginning to explore and experiment, and we support that. You are a sexual being. You're not ready, we don't think, for partnered sex, but certainly ready for masturbation. Here's the thing, though. You're not allowed to use your mother's toys when you want to masturbate or explore. If you would like to acquire a toy or two of your own, hey, here's an Amazon gift card. You can order one and have it shipped to the house, and we will not look inside. And you can keep it and keep it in your own room, and it can be yours. And then I would add, if I were you, at the end of this convo, we understand that this is an awkward thing to talk about, and you probably didn't want to have a conversation with your parents about this subject. But that conversation became unavoidable when you invaded your parents' privacy and began to swipe their sex toys. So we need to make a clean line. We need to draw a line between what's yours in that space and what's ours in that space. And you aren't going to swipe ours, and we aren't going to search your room looking for yours. And hopefully there will be no more invasions of privacy in either direction in this household. We respect your right to privacy. You have to respect ours as well. Or there will be more awkward conversations like this in your immediate future. As we've talked about on the show before, we should seek out what's right for us and not compromise on what's most important. Our relationship should add value to our lives, especially in the bedroom. So why don't we think the same way about our sex toys? Dame Products is a woman-owned sex toy company making the next generation of vulva-tested, vulva-approved vibrators. Founded by a credentialed sexologist and an engineering whiz, Dame develops toys with the help of real users and couples like you. They're closing the pleasure gap and helping to make the world a better place, one vulva at a time. Their vibrators and accessories are made with medical-grade silicone, smart design principles, and lots of love, earning glowing press from the New York Times, W Magazine, and many more. Whether you're a couple looking for a little extra boost where it matters or on a journey of self-exploration, we're sure Dame will earn a spot on your nightstand. And the best part, Dame offers returns within 60 days, so your satisfaction is quite literally guaranteed. Use the code SAVAGE for $10 off your next order at dameproducts.com.
Hi, Dan. I'm kind of lost right now. I try to follow your advice in a lot of what I do in my life and in my relationship, but my fiance just left me. We've been together for 4 years and engaged for 2, which I know can be kind of short, but my question isn't about how to deal with the emotions of the breakup. My question is two parts. How do I go about untangling the last 4 years we've had together, most of the property that we own, physical things we own together, and I'm going to be moving out in a week or two? And on top of that, how do I make sure that our friend group doesn't alienate him or me? Because it wasn't a mutual breakup, but it wasn't bad either. It's sad, but I don't want my close friends to be mad at him for hurting me, and I don't want his friends to be mad because I couldn't live up to the expectations that he wanted.
So you tried to follow my advice, and your fiancé left you. I apologize if my advice blew up your relationship somehow. Moving on to your questions, how do you untangle the last 4 years, all the physical property that you two own together? I assume you're talking about furniture and kitchenware. I am guessing at your stage of life, you didn't buy a house or a condo together. Well, you have a conversation with your now ex-fiancé about the property that you own together, the things you own together, and what he values and what he would like to take versus what you value and you would like to take. You may find that there's an end table that you want that he does not want. You may find that there's a couch that you want and that he also wants that you spent a certain amount of money on together. You determine what that couch is worth now, and if you can't agree who gets it, you flip a coin, and the person who gets the couch then pays the person who doesn't get the couch the value, not of its original purchase price, but the garage sale yard sale value of the couch now. And that can be a painful process, particularly if you guys share an aesthetic and you really like a lot of the things mutually that you both acquired together. But it's a common dilemma. Anyone who's ever been divorced, and there are a lot of people out there who've been divorced, anyone who's ever broken up with somebody after cohabitating with them has been through this. The more complicated question is, how do you make sure your friend group doesn't kick him out or his friend group doesn't kick you out? How do you make sure your friends aren't furious with him on your behalf? How does he make sure his friends aren't furious with you on his behalf? Well, your friends are going to take their cues from you guys. If you talk shit about him to your friends are going to fling shit at him. If he talks shit about you to his friends, the same will happen. Now, friends will sometimes, in the wake of a breakup, feel like it's their duty to start talking shit about an ex, your ex. And you may have to have that off the past. If your friends start in on him, you should say, no, the breakup was hard. The breakup was painful. I didn't live up to his expectations. He broke up with me. I didn't see that coming. I thought we could work our way through this. I like him still. He's a good person. We weren't right for each other. Better we part now than after marriage and kids and more property and a house. And we're trying to stick the dismount here. We're trying to salvage a friendship. Not immediately. So maybe in the next 6 months or a year, you don't invite him around. Your friend groups don't mingle much. But a year from now, we want to be what we were for a lot of our relationship, which is, you know, close friends, just without the close friends and lovers and fiancé part of that. So don't throw shit at him. Don't talk shit about him. That's not helping me. Your friends who talk shit about your exes, they think they're doing you a favor. Let them know that it's not a favor that you want them to do. Let them know that you want them to take you out, to go to movies, to hang out, to buy ice cream. Let them know that you want to be distracted. Let them know you want to talk about other things besides the breakup. And in time, what you want from them is to accept your ex back into the friend group, just as you hope to be accepted in time back into his friend group. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health, whether it's a knee injury, bad back, or something worse. Guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. I'm guilty of it myself. One of the reasons scientists believe that people in long-term relationships live longer is our partners force us to go to the doctors. I forced Terry to go. He forces me to go. I'm going to the doctor at 4 o'clock this afternoon after this recording session because Terry made me make the appointment. Guys are like that. The same is true. Guys won't make the appointment. Guys won't do what they need to do for erectile dysfunction. Studies show that 70% of guys who experience ED do not get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop men's health company where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door in a convenient monthly delivery. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, no awkward face-to-face conversations, no uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you have to do is visit GetRoman.com/Savage, fill out a brief medical onboarding, chat with a doctor, and get FDA-approved ED meds delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online and get checked out by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but with Roman, it's really easy, so take care of it. For a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/Savage. That's GetRoman.com/Savage for a free online visit. GetRoman.com/Savage.
Hi, Dan. First of all, thank you for the 10 years of advice that you've given me and knowledge that I've gained from your show and your column. I'm calling because I started dating a guy recently, and it's been a couple of weeks, and he expressed an interest in wanting to change my tampon or pad during my cycle. He suggested that this would bring us closer together and instill more trust and vulnerability. I don't know. I've never had that request before. I don't use a tampon, and I told him that I use a Diva cup. And he said he definitely wants to learn. And I don't know, it's just something he wants to do. I asked him if he's done it before. He said he did it before with a prior girlfriend. He said it's not a fetish or anything, just another way to bring us together. I've Googled, and I can't see any sort of, like, fetish about this or any man talking seriously about this. A lot of it's just been a lot of joking on the internet and more sympathetic men if a woman got hurt and couldn't do it herself. But again, I don't know what your thoughts are about this and if this is a thing that men are interested in.
Your call reminded me of the one time I had heard that someone out there, and a kind of high-profile someone, had expressed an interest not in changing his lover's tampon, but in being his lover's tampon. Prince Charles was in conversation. He was talking on the phone with his then-mistress, now-wife, Camilla Parker Bowles, and it was recorded surreptitiously and published. And what everybody said at the time and still says is that Prince Charles wanted to come back as her tampon. I'm reading the text of it now. I have it in front of me. Charles, oh God, I'll just live inside your trousers or something. It would be so much easier. He wants to be in her pants all the time, wants to get in her pants all the time. Jokes about being her underwear. Who hasn't made that joke with the lover they were super into? I know I have. Camilla laughs. What are you going to turn into, a pair of knickers? Both laugh. Oh, you're going to come back as a pair of knickers, she says. Charles, or God forbid, a Tampax. That would be just my luck. Camilla, oh, what a wonderful idea. You are a complete idiot. He wasn't really interested in coming back as a Tampax. That was actually his worst case scenario. He desired to come back in his next life as a pair of Camilla's underpants, but shit always goes wrong for Charles, and he thought maybe he'd wind up coming back as her tampon. Anyway, moving on to your boyfriend, I'm thinking this is a fetish. I'm thinking this is a kink. I'm thinking this is something that turns him on, and that's why he wants to do it. There are lots of other ways that he could be really intimate, that you two could be really intimate in ways lovers typically aren't. You could wipe his ass. He could wipe your ass. He's not proposing that. He's proposing this deeply symbolic act that is very much tied to sex and reproduction and otherness, the woman's body versus his own body, and I'm sure it's a kink and there's a way for you to find out. Let him do it. Or let him watch you do it under the ruse of showing him how it's done so that maybe later, if you're more comfortable with the idea, you'll let him do it. But he has to be naked or in his tighty-whities while he watches you do it, and then all you have to do is glance down, and if there is a raging, drooling boner between his legs, then it's a kink, then it's a turn-on. And then you get to ask yourself, okay, is this, if it is a kink, if it is a turn-on, is it something you're willing to allow him to do? Is it a fetish too far? Is it something that GGG in you might be able to wrap your head around? Will it creep you out that he's eroticizing your period and this process? Or would it turn you on that he's eroticizing your period and this process? There are women out there who complain about male partners who don't want to have sex, who don't want to do anything sexual during their period. You might have a guy there who's interested in doing all sorts of bizarre and fun and different and in some ways useful, perhaps, things during yours. So if you can get him to be honest about it, if you can get him to open up about it, if you can bust him by pointing the hard dick in his tighty-whities and force him to be honest with you about it, then there's a whole other conversation you need to have about what is most likely his kink and whether then that's a kink you're willing to indulge. If you're willing to let him go there in you and you're willing to go there or let him go there for him. Looking to switch up your cooking routine? Looking to kick your cooking skills up a few dozen notches? Start this year off fresh with help from Blue Apron, your secret to easy meal planning. Choose from a variety of plans, including their kid-approved family plan, a vegetarian plan, or the brand new WW Freestyle plan. Learn how to poach, saute, and chop like a pro, all in the comfort of your own kitchen. Blue Apron really gives me a better way to cook, and they can give you a better way to cook too. If you're like me, they can get you cooking for the first time in your life because they offer chef-designed recipes that use fresh, seasonally inspired ingredients, and they offer step-by-step, easy-to-follow instructions. And if, like my husband, you can't get enough Chrissy Teigen in your life, she's a model, kick-ass Twitter, ass-kicker, also a cookbook author, You can get her recipe plan at Blue Apron. And with hers and every other recipe, they give time-saving tips and technique videos that help me learn as I go and can help you learn as you go. Coming up on the menu this month is smoky chicken thighs with mashed potatoes and garlic sautéed kale, and fresh basil fettuccine with zucchini, tomatoes, and goat cheese. Check out this week's menu and get $60 off at blueapron.com/savage. Head over to Blue Apron, use /savage, save yourself some money, and support the Lovecast. That's blueapron.com/savage. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hi, Dan. I am a gay male from the soon-to-be blue state of Texas, and I have a question about gay marriage. I actually, about 2.5 years ago, married, at the time, was my best friend, and recently, as far as 2 months ago, was actually told that I wasn't enough to make him happy. And my question is that we've fought for so long to get equality for marriage, and yet I find a lack of equality in the process of divorce, as far as people even recognizing my marriage or recognizing that I'm in pain or recognizing that sometimes it doesn't work out in a relationship that happens to be gay. I'm trying to avoid the stereotypes of I told you so. Gay people can't be monogamish. Gay people can't be monogamous. They can't have a meaningful and loving relationship. And right now I'm just sort of frustrated, and I need your advice on how to handle this and how to interact with people who sometimes give off this sort of negative energy about it.
First, I'm so sorry. My heart goes out to you. I have to say, though, and I hope I'm not unintentionally or accidentally salting any wounds, when I hear that people are breaking up because one or the other or both said, you're not enough to make me happy, it just kind of triggers me. It makes me think of this way in which we do long-term relationships and marriage wrong, where we're expected to get all things from this person, this other person, this one person, is burdened with being enough for us in all aspects, emotionally, socially, sexually, intimately, and vice versa. We are burdened with being enough, everything that person might need, socially, sexually, romantically, intimately. And in reality, of course, no one person can be all those things or enough of all of those things for any other one person. And we are allowed, and we should, look outside the relationship or reach outside the relationship. If not for sex, and I'm not necessarily talking about everyone has to have an open relationship, everyone has to have outside sexual contact, but we should be allowed to reach outside the relationship a little bit to get a little bit more of perhaps the emotional support that we need or the intimacy that we need from friends. And allowing for that, allowing for your spouse to have other people in their life who are capable and happy to meet some of their needs while still respecting the primacy of your relationship and while you still meeting enough most of their needs can make a relationship stronger. And yet so many people have it in their heads that there's something wrong with a relationship. If I look at my spouse and I think I need X in my life and my spouse is incapable of providing me with that X, provides me with so much else, but incapable of providing me with that thing, that X thing that I also need, and therefore our marriage is fatally flawed and I have to get out of it and go find someone who can give me everything I need. And in reality, of course, that person isn't out there. All right. Like I said, I hope I'm not unintentionally salting any wounds here. Your question is about what to do when people don't react sympathetically, what to do when people either have a look on their face that tells you that they're going, yeah, gay men, gay people, they just can't do this marriage thing, that they're bad at marriage and marriage probably wasn't for them and gay men can't make or honor a commitment. Gay men can't be monogamous or successfully monogamish. You can direct them to a study conducted by Statistics Netherlands. The Netherlands is the country that's had same-sex marriage the longest since 2001, rounding up now, closing in on 20 years. And they studied marriages performed since same-sex marriage came to the Netherlands. And what they found was the couples who were least likely to divorce were gay men. Gay male couples, least likely to divorce. More likely to divorce, straight couples, opposite-sex couples, more likely to divorce. Most likely to divorce and most likely to divorce were lesbian couples, same-sex female couples. You could throw that study in their faces. It's not hard to find. Google Statistic Netherlands marriage study. It pops right up. And I always like to add when I mention this study, of course, that gay male couples are the least likely to be monogamous, straight couples more likely to be monogamous, lesbian couples most likely to be monogamous. So it would seem that monogamy correlates inversely with the success of a long-term relationship. But that's just this one study. More studies are needed and correlation ain't causation. But you could throw that study at them. You can also take comfort, I mean, a perverse sort of comfort. Yours is not the only same-sex marriage that was made possible by a hard-fought, hard-won effort to secure this right for same-sex couples. Yours is not the only one that fell apart. Julie Goodridge and Hillary Goodridge were the plaintiffs in the Massachusetts Supreme Court case that brought same-sex marriage to Massachusetts, the first state to achieve legal same-sex marriage, marriage equality. And shortly after they married, after 2 decades together, they wound up divorcing. Divorce is one of the rights we were fighting for when we fought for marriage. It was often the case when a same-sex couple that had been together a very long time broke up that one person could be screwed over by the other person. One person may have been more of the home taker and supported the other person's career and then got kicked out with nothing. And they couldn't go to a court. They couldn't have a judge order spousal support or a judge determine, with the assistance of a couple of lawyers representing both sides, a fair and equitable division of marital property because they weren't married. So divorce is one of the rights we were fighting for when we fought for marriage. And I'm sorry that you had to avail yourself of that right. It is a sad right. But it is still a right, and it is still something that we have now that we should be proud that we have now because it makes our relationships, when we can marry, safer and more secure, and it makes us as individuals, if we have to exit those relationships, safer and more secure. And finally, if people are giving you grief, people are being assholes in the soon-to-be blue state of Texas, you also have the ability just to raise your middle finger and hold it right in front of their faces and refuse to engage any further.
Hey, Dan, Nancy, and the Tech Savvy at Risk Youth. I'm a 36-year-old woman calling from a very large city. I'm calling to advise on whether or not I should accept money from my husband for sex. Here's the background. We've been married for 14 years, have a 9-year-old son, and we are currently not having sex. The reason we aren't having sex is because I do not want to. After 14 years of marriage and all the things that come with it, I see him more as a brother, and I don't want to fuck my brother. We've done all the therapy, all the heart-to-hearts, and the arrangement that we have settled on for now is that we are remaining married, living in the same house, parenting our son, we're socially monogamous for the most part, and we are free to sleep with other people. I've been seeing the same man for the last 15 months, and I'm having the best sex of my life. My husband is aware. He supports me by parenting while I'm spending time away, but this is not his ideal outcome. In his perfect world, he would have a monogamous relationship that does include sex with his wife. Unfortunately, I cannot be that person for him anymore. I do feel some guilt around this. This is not what he signed up for when he married me. I didn't know Dan Savage existed when I was in college, and I did get married too early to know myself completely. He's gone to lunch with a woman a few times, but has said it's not what he's looking for. I've encouraged him to do online dating, but he says he doesn't want to put in the work for a relationship. I've suggested seeing a sex worker, but he is also disinterested in that. Last week, he circled back to me and he said if he's going to pay for sex, he would prefer to just pay me because he still jerks off to my pictures. He knows exactly what he would be getting from me, and I'm not as risky. That actually caught me flat-footed because he doesn't know that my number one fantasy is about being a high-end escort. Also, I think negotiating the engagement ahead of time would make a couple of things occur that I asked for but never received when we were having sex. Number one, a clear articulation of what he wants and what he likes. And number two, planning sex ahead of time. Anyway, I don't know what to do about this proposal. Because I've already feel like he's getting the short end of the stick with our current arrangement, I'm not comfortable fleecing him out of his money. I wonder if there's a way to make this a win-win. Maybe any money he pays could go towards a vacation fund or eating out of the family. I don't know. If I decide to do this, I think the devil's in the details of the arrangement. I could really use your advice on additional ways I should look at this and overall whether or not you think I should.
I'd file this one under take yes for an answer. It may not always be the answer, and you don't know how this is going to work out short term or long term, but at least give it a try. Your husband would like to have sex with you. You aren't particularly attracted to your husband. You are, however, turned on by the idea of being paid for sex, and you're turned on by the idea of your husband paying you for sex. There's definitely some sort of DS, dom sub, power play element going on there where you're having sex of your own free will with the guy you've got outside your marriage, and your poor, pathetic husband, if he wants access to you and your body, he has to pony up, he has to pay for it. That turns you on. You wouldn't have called if this didn't turn you on, at least a little bit. And so you've got to give it a shot. You need to have a conversation with your husband. You say you've done the counseling, you've done the heart-to-hearts. Have a heart-to-heart about this. Can he pay his wife for sex without feeling shredded emotionally, without destroying his self-esteem and his erotic self-esteem? Or does this turn him on too? Does the DS element of this work for him? Does it make his dick hard? If he's coming to you with money and begging and pleading for sex and that arouses him and it arouses you, well, fucking Yahtzee. Give it a shot. Give it a try. And you're obviously going to want to include an element of role play in this where you're going to plan for sex, you're going to make a date, you're going to book him for a certain time to fuck you for a certain amount of money. And he's going to have to tell you what he wants. He's the customer. He's buying the sex that he wants in that moment. So he's going to have to offer you clarity about what it is that he wants to do with you, what it is that turns him on, that he'd like to try. And then at that moment, like a sex worker, you can agree as to whether you will be contracted for those acts for that amount of money. And if there's something that he wants to do that you don't want to do, you don't have to take the booking. And I was literally thinking, I was going to suggest before you suggested it that the money he pays you, because it's coming out of your joint funds, be set aside in a special savings account for something that benefits you both, like a vacation, like meals out. And then this becomes not your husband pathetically paying you for sex. It becomes this erotic game that you have introduced to your moribund marital sex life that revives it and makes it sexy, hopefully for both of you. Obviously makes it sexy for you. This idea turns you on. The last I's you got to dot and T's you got to cross is to make sure that this turns your husband on too. And then give it a try. Take that yes for an answer. And if he enjoys it and you enjoy it and it makes you look forward to sex with your husband because now it's got this erotic structure that plays into your ultimate fantasy that it doesn't sound like you've ever shared with him, now's the time to share it with him. Again, Yahtzee, you win or you might win. I can't predict how this is going to play out emotionally in the long term, but there's a chance here that you could have a big fat fucking Yahtzee on your hands. Go for it. Okay, before we get to your response calls, some of the Savage Lovecast tweets of the week. Marie tweets, "Oh my God, girl with the ex-partner with the Hitler mustache on hashtag Savage Lovecast. I'm so delighted and relieved to hear that you broke up with that immature argumentative douchebag I almost called in last week. I was so annoyed. Yes, queen, your follow-up call made me so happy. You, Marie, and me, and everyone else." Sad Liberal tweets, "Oh, come on, Dan. If someone doesn't initiate conversations as often as someone wants, you shouldn't suggest they are autistic before you suggest that they are an introvert or just not compatible with the caller. These guys just want different levels of interaction. Hashtag Savage Lovecast." Okay, that's fair. Maybe I should have discussed the possibility that the caller in this case, whose partner wasn't very emotionally available to them, was just an introvert or maybe not that into them. But you know what? I don't think there's anything wrong with neurodiversity, and I don't think that there's anything necessarily pejorative or accusatory about suggesting that we keep in mind that some people might be on the spectrum and that just might be an intrinsic part of their personality and not necessarily disqualifying for love and relationships. But hey, that's just me. McKinley Hart tweets, "Per usual, Dan, you made me look at something in a totally different way. Let's all put more energy into unionizing Amazon workers and ITMFAing, more energy into those areas than invading someone's privacy, even if that someone is Jeff fucking Bezos. Thanks for continuously rocking my world." You are welcome, McKinley Hart. Thank you for listening. If you want me to possibly read your tweet on a future episode of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now some of your response calls.
Hi, I'm calling about the guy in Gainesville who's dating the engineer. And I just want to say that I'm on the spectrum and I've been married 20 years and most of them happily. And my husband asked me years ago in some frustration, like, do you just want a relationship checklist? And I was like, yes, that is totally what I want. And so, guy, if you're just willing to give up the idea that this boyfriend will intuit that you want him to text you in the morning, and you just tell him, I want you to text me in the morning, you might really open yourself up to a really happy relationship and tell him exactly what you want for dates, for anything. Just make a damn checklist. And frankly, we tend to be really low drama as people to have a relationship with. So that's a plus. I'm not saying it's going to work out, but it could. So good luck.
Hi, I'm calling about the woman in episode 638 who wants to have a baby with a sperm donor. I thought I heard you say she was 23. And then as the call went on, I thought, oh, she must be 33. And it makes sense because her biological clock is ticking and she has a solid career and tens of thousands of dollars in the bank. Sure, yes, go ahead and do it. And just tell your family you used a sperm donor. They don't need to know exactly how you used a sperm donor. But then at the end, when you re-said that she is 23, then I thought immediately, oh my gosh, no, 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 don't do this. This is a terrible idea. Kids are so much more difficult to raise than you could ever, ever imagine, especially at 23. Take 5 years. Hey, take 10 years. Work on your career. Bank a ton of money. Maybe you'll find a partner along the way. Maybe not. That's not important. But if you do, great. And if you don't in 10 years, then find a sperm donor and have a baby. You'll be so much happier and better equipped for the insanity that children bring to life.
Hi there. This is a comment for the girl in episode 638 who was worried about her boyfriend masturbating to images of his ex-girlfriend. I was seeing a guy for a long time and he told me that men in general, or straight men anyway, masturbate about their ex-girlfriends. Didn't bother me at all. But the good news was, after he eventually dumped me and married someone else and had a baby with her, I can take comfort in the fact that he's now masturbating about me.
All right, we're almost ready to leave it there. But before we leave it there, I want to remind you that tickets for the spring tour of the 14th Annual Hump Film Festival are on sale now, and they are going fast. We're kicking off this year's tour in Albuquerque, New Mexico on January 31st. For more info on the tour and to get tickets to a show near you, go to humpfilmfest.com. All right, that's where we're going to leave it. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you want to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz, 206-302-2064. And speaking of national tours, the Savage Lovecast is going on tour itself. Go to savagelovecast.com and click on events to find out when the Savage Lovecast Live, is coming to a city near you. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Carrie Goldberg on Twitter at KaGoldbergLaw. And if you want to follow the case, you can follow the case itself on Twitter at Herrick V. Grinder. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.